earlier this week, Mike put out a request to our readers for their stories. We wanted people to share with us where they were on 9/11. And it's amazing, wouldn't you say, Mike, how much people, how vividly people remember that day. It's really crazy the amount of detail that they can recall.
You know, there are very few people who can remember Pearl Harbor and the impact that had on us. There are even probably a minority who can remember the Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King's assassination. But this one is the litmus test for our several generations who are with us now. It's been 13 years, but it is as vivid as yesterday for most people, for many people. And their stories are absolutely fascinating. It doesn't matter where you were. You know, you could have been near ground zero, or you could have been, we heard from people in Tunisia. Mm-hmm. Americans, we heard from a guy in Paris and a family that was in Dublin at the time. But everybody's impression is different and it's interesting and it's the kind of thing that really should be preserved.
I remember when, Mike told me he was doing this and, you know, came over and we were talking about how we were going to present these stories on the web because we knew that that's what we wanted to do. They're so moving and touching. And Mike walked over and you handed me a stack of emails, literally 2 inches thick. That was the number of different emails we got from people who wanted to reach out and tell their story and share their story. And we have some of those and I want to read some of them just because they are so, they're so memorable.
Please do.
So this first one did include some profanity, so I've changed some of the words so that we can keep our FCC license. But this gentleman says, I was one of about 15 foreign service officers learning Arabic at a USG facility in Tunisia on September 11th, 2001. Many of us had days earlier been reading Arabic articles in regional print media as part of our training, citing USG sources claiming that Al-Qaeda had mysteriously and suddenly gone silent. On the afternoon in question, my class was finishing up shortly after 1400 local time. We could hear through the closed classroom door the sound of the television in the common room near the front door. I descended to the common room and saw two locally hired instructors staring silently at the television screen that showed smoke pouring out the top of one of the World Trade Center towers. It looked almost like a cigarette. The CNN commentator speculated that there had been some sort of freakish air accident involving an airplane crashing into the tower, like the bomber that flew into the Empire State Building in 1945. I sat down and joined the growing crowd of students and teachers transfixed by the images. Occasionally, someone spoke, but rarely. At 15:03, we all saw the second airliner strike the other tower. Everyone gasped. Some reflexively blurted out expletives. One of the teachers declared, "This is an attack. Those Al-Qaeda blanks did this." We all looked at each other and then the screen.
Yeah, that's some powerful imagery because I think that the television is somehow inextricably tied up with all of this.
I believe that was William Jordan, and he emailed us from Paris. I assume he's retired now.
He is.
That's so typical of the people all over the country. You know, a lot of D.C., a lot of New York, naturally, but, you know, Montana, Helena, Montana.
Everywhere, yeah. Ginny was in D.C. that day, and she said this. She wrote, "For some blessed reason, I had to go up to the then-empty PR office in my agency. I knew nothing until I saw the fiery images on the TV. I sat frozen until the Pentagon was hit. My sister worked in the buildings just west up the hill. When I finally reached her, she was crazed and in her own shock. They heard the plane go over their heads, so close that Vietnam vets instinctively dove under desks. Not one to follow rules, she ran and managed to get her car out of the lot while folks were marched to the underpasses. She described a woman walking around disoriented and in shock so severe that she would not let my sister help. I work on North Capitol Street near the Capitol, so I figured we were next. I had to decide if I wanted to be bombed while inside my building or out in the open football field of the nearby school. Later, trying to get out of the parking lot, I worked for 45 minutes to get the keys away from a woman who just continuously used her car as a ramming device in the middle of the frozen intersection. In total shock, she had no idea what she was doing."
Well, that story I don't think I've ever heard before.
You know,
something like that happened.
You can't make this stuff up either. And it whatever you can think of probably happened that day.
We're speaking with Mike Causey, our senior correspondent, and web manager Julia Ziegler and we're relating stories that have been sent in to federalnewsradio.com of people's memories of 9/11 here as we celebrate this week, really is the 13th anniversary. So keep going.
Yeah.
These are really interesting stories.
Yeah, you know, New York. New York was the other big one. And this is what someone had to say about they were there. They were at the World Trade Center. She says, or I'm sorry, he says, I was at number 6 World Trade Center that morning attending a customs national import specialist wearing apparel seminar. I had taken the subway in with a few other attendees from our hotel across from Penn Plaza. When we got off the subway, they opted to take the surface route into number 6, whereas I, as was my custom, and as much as I had been there many times before, went through the underground entrance to World Trade Center number 1, the North Tower. I usually went that way to decide if I wanted coffee from the kiosk just at the entrance to World Trade Center number 1. That day, I decided against coffee and marveled at the glorious morning pouring through the massive windows of World Trade Center number 1. It was 8:20 a.m.
I actually talked to Gary after receiving that email, and you know, to put a voice to this tale. But the thing that this shows, among other things, is chance.
Absolutely.
Had he taken the other route, he might very well have been killed. And there, again and again, you had people who said, I should have been here. We had a former intern with Federal News Radio. She was a Navy employee, Navy civilian. She was here for a couple of weeks. I got to know she and her husband very well. Still know them. They live in Indianapolis now. But she was working on that side of the Pentagon that was hit. And as it turned out that day, her husband was sick. And he's a big, strong guy, and she said he's not a malingerer, so she took him to the doctor. Otherwise, she would have been in that direct line of fire. And I had a friend who worked for a petroleum company, and she was supposed to fly out that Tuesday. You know, 9/11 was a Tuesday, but an emergency came up in California, and she had to take the exact same flight, but Monday. And you hear this again and again, you know, if I zigged instead of zagging, if I turned left instead of right.
That's exactly what Herb said. Herb said, I was working for a DOD agency, DISA, at one of our satellite offices. When I got the initial phone call, my thoughts went immediately to the welfare of one of our site survey teams who were there at the Pentagon to conduct a site survey for a big installation. There was good and bad this day for our office. The good part was that our government team lead picked this day to get into a fender bender, which resulted in the team being delayed going to the side of the building that was hit by the airplane. So they were not on that side when it occurred. The bad part was that our immediate supervisor lost his wife in this tragedy, and I lost a high school friend. This is a day that I will never forget. For me personally, it sent chills up my spine because myself and the government lead that was leading this team had traded sites so she could minimize her travel out of state and be closer to home. It could easily have been me at the Pentagon that day.
Yeah, and there you go with that luck of the draw.
Yeah,
yeah. Scary sometimes, but profound. It leaves people somehow changed, even if you missed the tragedy personally.
It is. What I find so amazing is that, you know, sitting here reading these, I get choked up. It is amazing how much something like that impacts your life, and you don't even realize it until you're reminded of it. And so it's I think important on days like this to look back, and weeks like this to look back and reflect on that.
Well, and if I can plug the column today, because I thought I'd do a morning after column. We did 9/11, did it justice, I think. But when I was a very young reporter at the Washington Post, and I mean very young, I was surrounded by a lot of very smart, aggressive, been there, done that people. So I decided early on to listen and keep my yap shut. And one day the head chief editorial writer, she said something that even though I was extremely young, it struck me as this is the kind of thing I ought to file away and remember and use later on. And she said, after every funeral, somebody has to say, what's for lunch? Now that's pretty heavy stuff, because the point is, or the point I took away from it, is that no matter what kind of a tragedy you have, no matter how, what a loss this is, this will never be the same, but at some point life has to go on. And that's what one particular story I singled out today in the column points out, that this was a terrible tragedy. We'll never forget it. Now let's get moving.